after the puck. Yakovlev trying to move it. Letang got it to the point. Savard in front. Here's Suzuki. Spinning. He's alone and tight. Got it for the scores!
Yeah, Nick Suzuki did it again. So did Cole Caulfield. So did Kirby Doc. Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690, along with Andy Bennett, who's back, and Terry Haig. For the first time in a few weeks, filling in for an ailing Joey Elias. I hope I'm not next, Andy. John Still will be back tomorrow after attending that instant classic between the Bills and Vikings in Buffalo. Every Monday at this time, brought to you by Billy Bob Productions. If you would like to see and hear the highlights of the TSN 690 20th anniversary party, thanks to James Correa, it's in video form, feature-length video, about 60 minutes. You can go to my website and watch it all at MitchMelnick.com. Here he is, Michael Farber at the Hockey Hall of Fame. How are you?
I'm great, Mitch. How are you?
Oh, good. Nice to hang out with my buddy Haig again.
Well, it's always nice when Terry Haig is in the house, no matter whose house that might be.
I've never been invited to yours, Mike.
Well, you know what? We have to clean up first.
Okay.
And I don't think too many visitors have been to Crawford Park over the last 3 years or so, right?
Well, it's been a quiet place. It's fun hanging out. This afternoon was the media awards given by the Hockey Hall of Fame, the Elmer Ferguson and the Foster Hewitt. And Al Morganti won the Elmer Ferguson. And what was mildly disappointing is he didn't tell this story about editors. And Terry, you would appreciate that. Because he was covering the Flyers, and after a terrible game, Bobby Clark told them, you know, we were so bad today, we couldn't have beaten the midget team, which an editor improved to, we were so terrible today, we couldn't have beaten a team of midgets.
I love those editors when they take control.
Oh, yeah. Man. It's,
well, Mike knows. Mike was a great writer. I mean,
of course.
There's people that get on, you know, they would just step back and allow the writers to write. Instead of adding little things like that, life would be better. That's all I have.
Well, certainly he disimproved the copy.
For our listeners, Al Morganti, longtime writer and broadcaster in the Philadelphia area. Right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And quite a good one. And one of the good guys. And you can still kind of catch him if you're lucky enough to get some Flyers games. He's on there, and he was on the radio there for years with Angelo Cataldi in the morning on WIP, which is the second time in a couple weeks WIP has come up on this show.
Well, and it was a big Philly feel to Toronto today with Bill Clement winning the Foster Hewitt Award.
And Bill Clement was born in Thurso, Quebec.
Guy Lafleur.
Yeah. Beautifully bilingual Clement, too. He's just wonderfully bilingual.
Yeah. Okay, before we get to what's going down tonight and what might happen beyond tonight, how about the start to the season of Suzuki wearing the C? And I, you know, there are some people who wondered, I suppose, that it might be too much at his young age. I was not among them. I don't think you're among them either. This is the perfect.
Absolutely not. I mean, there are two things. One, the contract. Oh, how's he going to handle the weight of the contract? Two is, oh, the C. How is he going to handle the C at age 23? The answer is, yeah, just fine. You know, we saw him a couple of years ago, and it struck me, here's a baby Bergeron. You can see he's a conspicuously smart player. Yep. And I didn't know quite how much offense he would provide, and this year he's providing offense. Now it's at a rate that is not sustainable. He is shooting 27%. And nobody has a shooting percentage that high over a sustained period. Career, he's at 12.5. And if he finishes there a little higher, and, you know, even the best scorers finish, you know, 14, 15%. And I'm not sure he's going to be an elite scorer, but he can score. You know, we saw that the other night against Pittsburgh. And it was very impressive the way he handles himself, played a lot against the top line of the Penguins, you know, just did so many really good things, including in the face-off circle. It's fun to see a complete player, and if he can be the classy force that Bergeron is in Boston, and he and Caulfield over the years become what Bergeron and Marchand have become, I mean, you're in for a good time. And it's really nice to see him. And people wondering about Brendan Gallagher, well, when this team gets good, and I presume at some point it will in a couple of years, I'm not sure Brendan Gallagher will be a part of that. And you want Suzuki to take the reins now and let him grow a little bit into that role if he needs more growing. So I thought it was a heady move, and certainly he seems untroubled by it all.
When did you get to Toronto?
Sunday, which was yesterday. Took the train. Lovely.
Yeah, I'll be doing that on Friday. Okay, so there were back-to-back nights for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the hockey world to salute one of the greatest defensemen of all time. This is Friday when he was in... on the ice, honored before Saturday's game. So he was honored twice on the ice. This was Friday night.
The first Swede inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame and the highest scoring defenseman in Maple Leafs history, Börje Salming.
And Michael, for a few minutes there, the fans in Toronto, this is a slow build, actually sounded like a Montreal tribute. And what was very emotional to see Salming in his state was Daryl Sittler next to him just could not control the tears hanging on to Sittler's arm, hanging on to Salming's arm. It was such a beautiful moment.
And we saw it again when he was honored individually on Saturday night. And that was the reason to do it. First night, part of the Hockey Hall of Fame honored members who were out there for face-offs and what have you. And then later on, it was just about Salming. I know he's getting some experimental medication here. He's now back in Sweden. Won't be a part of things tonight that he could not get in Sweden. And that was one reason for his coming over. Börje Salming is one of the toughest players ever in the modern era of the National Hockey League. And he had to be. I mean, he absolutely had to be for the abuse he took. And right away, he wasn't going to be happy with that. He wasn't going to shrink from it. You got to remember, he grew up in Kiruna, which is in the north, basically Lapland. And his father worked in the mine, and that's what he was going to do, and he was good enough at hockey to get out of there. And he was really tough, and he wasn't the first Swede to come to the NHL. Tommy Bergman, you remember Tommy Bergman, the defenseman, was
Detroit.
Here a little bit before. But the Leafs brought both Inge Hammerstrom and Börje Salming over, kind of a package deal. And they were both good. I mean, Hammerstrom was not as good because Salming, in my mind, was as good as a Leaf player as ever. I'm surprised he finished, I think, eighth when they did their list of top 100 players a few years ago. He was a remarkable defenseman, never won a Norris. Lots of good defensemen have never won Norrises, including Brad Park. But he was an exceptional player and a tough guy. He was also just a physical specimen, just this lanky, sinewy guy. And to see the ravages of ALS, it hurts. And I know people in Quebec and in the Quebec Foundation ALS, and your friend Claudine Cook, our friend Claudine Cook and her people, I mean, you know, they're working hard. Lots of people have lots of causes, and I have mine and you have yours. But if you're looking for some place to drop your charity money, I think there are a few better places than in ALS research.
Michael, and Mitch too, I guess. I had a weird feeling when I was watching some of that ceremony, and it was beautiful. And, you know, I learned a little bit about a player that I didn't know that much about. But there was a part that didn't sit well with me when I think about the lack of attention that the NHL has put to head shots and head trauma and head injuries and what some of these players now are going to be facing down the line, and the NHL's sort of lack of teeth in any way in addressing head injuries and players going back in a game that have, you know, are clearly concussed to the untrained eye. There's just part of me that didn't, you know what I mean? Like, watching that ceremony, it's kind of like you're celebrating somebody, but at the same time, you're not protecting your players now that might be facing something like this 20, 30 years down the line.
Well, I don't know enough about ALS to see a direct causality. if it were, you know, we've seen concussions and we've seen what concussions can do. There's an assistant general manager, Andy, of the Calgary Flames, named Chris Snow, a one-time sports writer. ALS was genetic in his family. And he's on an experimental drug, and he's had it for 3 years and goes to work every day. So there have been advances. But you're right. The league has to make sure players are protected. One thing you've noticed about headshots, they've toughened those rules. Fighting has not been banned. And, hey, they're headshots. You're throwing punches at somebody's head. It can't be described any other way. But in recent years, they have become the exception. And they haven't faded entirely from the picture, but fighting certainly is reduced. And it is up to the league and the teams as well, and team doctors to understand this and better concussion protocols. And it's an ongoing process, no question.
Yeah, I just want to PS this. When you were referring to Boreas Salming as one of the toughest players in NHL history, for those too young, Boreas Salming was not a feared player. He was tough in that he endured so much crap as a defenseman, a skilled defenseman. This was an era during when the Broad Street Bullies were ring, right? I mean, that's
right.
And they attacked him physically repeatedly, and he never shied away from physical contact. He was a remarkable player.
We heard the phrase chicken Swedes, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the toughest guys, we're not talking about the Fergies, John Fergusons, or Bob Probert's or Chris Nylund's. Now we're talking about players who were tough in other ways. I mean, Peter Forsberg was a remarkably tough player. In fact, his temper probably got him into trouble because it ravaged his body. He would go back at people all the time. And Thomas Sandstrom, who was kind of half Finn, half Swede. I mean, these were really tough guys. So you might have heard the phrase chicken Swedes along the line, especially if you're of a certain age. These guys were not scared of anything.
Terry wants to ask you specifically about a player going in tonight with a strong connection to the province of Quebec.
I've been very moved by the fact that Herbie Carnegie is finally getting in, Michael. You and I grew up in the tri-state area almost at the same time. We know what integration meant to all of us, watching on television, watching in the stadiums, in the ballparks. Herbie Carnegie, extraordinary man. Talk to what it means for him to finally get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, Herb Carnegie is going in as a builder. He played some he played some senior hockey in Quebec. Jean Béliveau was a teammate. Béliveau thought he was a marvelous player. Conn Smythe said, if his skin were a different color, we'd sign him right now for $10,000. So that tells you about the state of the NHL. Now, as a builder, generally you have to have a broader and deeper resume. Herb Carnegie did not, because he was not allowed to. But he did form a very successful youth program in the Toronto area for kids disadvantaged kids, and he was a builder in that way. So as someone who was on the selection committee, I mean, really is, I mean, do you try to address a historical wrong? And I think the committee ended up doing that. This is an ongoing fight. I mean, the NHL says, you know, hockey's for everybody. And then Mitchell Miller gets signed. Well, it's for, you know, people who did that as well. Just parenthetically, I spoke to a general manager of another NHL team this week who said, you know, we, before looking at this player at all, our first call was to the NHL. And they said, you know, Mitchell Miller's a no-go. So the fact that the Bruins didn't make that call initially struck this general manager as basic insanity. So, you know, you hope the game continues to move in a certain direction. And seeing Herb Carnegie's plaque in the hall might nudge it along, might inspire some people, might make the hockey landscape a little better.
We got about a minute here. You want to get to Alfredson?
Oh, sure. And one thing to know about Daniel Alfredson, and, you know, we saw all the stuff on the ice. What you didn't see is his family relationship. He had a sister with general anxiety disorder, and that's why Alfredson back in 08 got involved with mental health initiatives in the Ottawa area. And his mother, who passed away a few years ago, had MS, and she was in a wheelchair for 30 years or so. And when you look at how players and people respond, we're talking about toughness. Alfredson said, she's the toughest person I ever knew. And it really pushed him to try to be that kind of guy. You know, we basically started with toughness, and now we're ending with toughness.
All right, go get him, Michael. Thank you. Okay. Looking forward to watching this tonight. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks.
When we come back,